Today on Wings.
As more and more women enter the profession of journalism, they are exposed to the same risks, and in some cases more, than their male colleagues, often with little backup, training, or support. How much more at risk has not yet been determined.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I had to go to New York to work there for a while, and I found the book written by American journalist women who had covered the Vietnam War. And in that book, one of them said, every time somebody asks me about what is being a woman in a war, I always answer, I don't know, because I've never been a man, so I cannot compare.
Women on the Frontline 2015, produced and presented by Mindy Ran.
As more and more women enter the profession of journalism, they are exposed to the same risks, and in some cases more, than their male colleagues, often with little backup, training, or support. How much more at risk has not yet been determined. In 2005, when many of the interviews included in this program were recorded, violence against women journalists and safety issues were in the press due to a series of high-level kidnappings. It returns periodically to the headlines, as it did in 2011, in the aftermath of the sexual attack on CBS war correspondent Laura Logan in Tahrir Square. However, it is not often in the news, especially in regions or countries where violence is highest. Violence and avoidance are both effective tools to silence. 2005 was also the year that the first global survey on the issue was published, along with an international conference of the International Federation of Journalists and the International News Safety Institute, or INSEE, on the safety of female journalists. Sarah de Jong was, at that time, the Deputy General Secretary of INSEE and one of the organizers of the conference.
I don't think it's been that long that we have seen that many women journalists, either international or local, indeed, going to cover either their own wars or that fly in and out of international war zones. Because this is a relatively new trend, at least certainly in the amount of women journalists that we're talking about within the last perhaps 30 or 40 years. Of course, unfortunately, we are also seeing quite a heavy increase within the annual list of our casualties of journalists and media staff that gets killed around the world, also increasingly every single year, women. We don't want to put them on a different platform necessarily as their male colleagues, but what we do want is to actually investigate and explore whether or not women journalists have different safety requirements than their male colleagues, which would allow them to do their job better or safer. So, for example, we know that there are flak jackets out there made and designed for women, but I can assure you that hardly anybody knows about this. Why is that? Why should a woman journalist be forced to wear a very big, large, cumbersome flak jacket designed for a man? However, a female flak jacket, you know, would take into consideration quite practically the shape of her body, therefore allowing her to move much freer in doing her job. Therefore, maybe she'll be walking faster as opposed to slower. Are women more vulnerable than their male colleagues? Are they more at threat than their male colleagues from sexual assault? And we're not at all trying to imply that male journalists are never at any kind of risk of sexual assault. We are quite aware that they are. It's just that we felt it would be quite interesting to have a look at whether or not women do have different requirements than their male colleagues.
It is the Geneva Convention that is supposed to protect journalists in war zones and list them officially as non-combatants.
This Geneva Convention is not respected most of the times.
By who?
By the armies in general. It's not respected by the groups that fight against each other. And it's not respected, this is more important, neither by the troops of the countries that theoretically defend international law and the countries that defend democracy and the countries which are supposed to be the symbol of the freedom.
Olga Rodriguez is a decorated human rights journalist and war correspondent. On the 8th of April in 2003, she was injured in the Hotel Palestine bombing in Baghdad when American tanks fired on the hotel known to house 200 foreign journalists.
I woke up that morning really soon at 6 o'clock in the morning. Jose Couso, a friend of mine, woke me up. We went to a balcony and he showed me that in front of us there was a line of American tanks. The day before, we had already seen American troops in front of our hotel. But that day, they were closer, on the bridge. They were not hiding, they were there. They were shooting, not to our side, but to the other side. So at 2 minutes before 12 o'clock, I was in my balcony, in the 16th floor of the hotel. Suddenly my sat phone rang. So when I was going to go inside my room from the balcony, the attack came. First I thought I was dead, because it was incredible, the explosion. I didn't feel anything inside me. It was like something had been broken inside me. Some seconds later, I reacted and I started to touch to myself, and I realized that I had some pieces of a camera who was in fire to take them out from my leg, and I couldn't hear anything. So I ran to the next room and I arrived there and I said to my colleagues, "It has been against the hotel, I cannot hear anything." So we started to run, to going downstairs, because we thought that if there is a first attack, we know that it's possible that a second attack comes. When we arrived to the 14th floor, we remember that Jose Couso, one of our friends, he worked for Telecinco and Spanish TV. He was recording from that balcony. The balcony where I was completely destroyed, with a lot of holes on the wall. And in the 14th floor, we went to Jose Couso's room and we discovered that he was injured. We took him and we went to the hospital. The doctors cut one of this leg of him, and after that we thought that he was going to be able to survive, but he wasn't. He died 2 hours later. A journalist of Reuters died too in this attack. Another one was really injured, and a woman of the Reuters was injured too, and some of us have lost hearing forever, which is my case, in one of my ear, in my case. At first we thought that Iraqis had attacked us, but quickly we realized that they didn't. The Pentagon immediately admitted that the American troops had attacked the hotel, and the Pentagon said that they did it because there were Iraqi fighters shooting them from the hotel, which was not true. They realized that we were 200 journalists, European and American journalists, saying that is not true at all. The conclusion of the Pentagon was that there was a man with binoculars watching the American tanks from one of the balconies of the Palestine Hotel. That is an excuse strong for them to say that they had to attack.
Would you be willing to go back to Iraq?
I would like to go back to Iraq. I defend the right of societies to receive news and information. Information is one of the main basis of democratic and free societies.
In May of 2015, after many years of campaigning by the International Federation of Journalists and others against the impunity of violence against journalists, as so few perpetrators are ever brought to justice, the UN Security Council adopted Resolution 2222. This now calls for governments to safeguard journalists covering armed conflicts. But this did not protect those under threat in 2005. Florence Abanas, a senior reporter for the French daily Libération, and her translator were leaving their hotel in Baghdad and were not seen again for 157 days. 150 days into her daughter's captivity, Jacqueline Abanas spoke to me about whether she felt it was important for women to report war.
Les hommes ou les femmes participent au même monde et doivent défendre la liberté d'information.
She told me that she still feels it is important for both men and women to take part and to defend freedom of information. Women are also able to report, to analyze an event, and to make it understood and felt.
Elles ont la même capacité de rapporter un événement, de l'analyser et de le faire comprendre et sentir. Oui, je viens de vous le dire, les femmes ont une...
Mrs. Abanas said to me that she did think there was a difference in sensibility. Speaking of her daughter, she said that Florence never took official reports for granted and always went out to see the people involved, the men and women who don't have a voice, the victims, the oppressed. These were the people she went looking for. But there are also men who do this. On a professional level, she does not believe in a philosophy of difference.
Tellement au niveau professionnel à la philosophie de la différence.
Quite often, male journalists will look at a conflict, perhaps more from a soldier's point of view, from a military point of view. They will want to report on actual battles or possibly the weapons that are used. Again, I don't want to say all male journalists. Of course not. I'm sure there are a lot of male journalists as well that want to cover the whole entire story. However, it is quite common for women journalists, and again, more the international ones than the local ones, in our opinion, that actually will go to a conflict zone to report on the human dimension. They will have much more of a focus on refugee issues, on perhaps women and children issues, general civilian issues, compared to their male colleagues. So on the one hand, this is a good thing because they would make very good combinations in teams. On the other hand, it might make them more vulnerable because they might actually go into areas in order to get these stories that might be slightly more risky or might give them a higher profile to those types of elements operating in a war zone that might be looking for soft targets and grab them, such as we have seen with Juliana Sgrena and as well with Florence Obena, who are very famous journalists, especially within their own countries, known to be doing these types of stories that actually go out in the streets without any protection whatsoever and actually go and talk to the people on the street and want to bring their story. On the one hand, there's a very strong need for most women journalists not to be considered different from their male colleagues. Now, this, of course, has probably quite a lot of psychological reasons. Also, at the same time, I think we should never underestimate that what drives a woman journalist or camera woman or photographer or technician, any woman dealing with any part of the media work that actually wants or is covering wars very often are very driven people. Again, this, of course, is the big difference between international journalists and local journalists, because local journalists very often don't have a choice. Whereas international journalists, very often it's a prestigious thing, it's a career move. And they want to be just as tough as their male colleagues. And very often they are, if not tougher, and quite willing to take a lot of risk for the job that they do, because they really want to go and report on the human dimension of conflicts. I do think that if there is ever going to be a big difference between women and men, is that they will report on conflict in quite a different way.
In Russia, many of the war correspondents are women. In fact, there has been a feminization of the industry there, and up to 80% of journalists there are women. Russian political journalist and current vice chair of the European Federation of Journalists, Nadia Azkina.
First of all, I wouldn't like to divide women war correspondents and women investigators, because in my country, in Russia, it's very closely connected, and many women do both. They are focused mostly on human dimension, so they present different face of war and different personages of war, not only generals. They show faces of men and women, civilians and ordinary soldiers, children and old people. They create real picture of the war, real picture of this drama with different faces, with different details of real life. And what about women correspondents and women investigators? Of course, they face double pressure than men. First of all, they are threatened more. They could be raped, and they had no any serious protection from their publications and companies. Unfortunately, men also do not have enough protection, and sometimes being sent into wars, they are not informed enough about different dangers.
Since 2005, there have been vast improvements in the availability of hostile environment and safety training for female journalists, with many institutions offering courses for classically under-supported women, like freelancers or those living in and reporting from conflict zones, in places like Palestine.
Being a journalist and a human being in Gaza Strip, it's not easy at all. We face, as a journalist, many obstacles and many dangers in covering events, and especially in the war. I left Gaza 6 years ago. I had a few panic attacks, because I fear of death while I'm young. So after that, I moved to West Bank. Being a journalist in West Bank is different from Gaza, because here, journalist has a face-to-face the Israeli soldiers in checkpoints, and especially in demonstration, which journalist cover. 2 years ago, in June 2013, during the demonstration which the journalist union organized for freedom of movement, six of journalists injured. I'm one of them.
Azil Al-Akras, national newspaper journalist, broadcaster, and agency's reporter from Palestine. But what happens to local female journalists not living in recognized conflict zones, but still living under threat every day? Currently, Mexico is one of the most dangerous places on the planet to be a journalist. This year, the Communication and Information on Women's Organization, or CIMAC, published a report documenting 184 cases of violence against women journalists since 2002, including 11 deaths, with a sharp increase in reported cases since 2010. To quote the report, "The Mexican state uses gender-based violence as a mechanism of control, a tactic which contributes to the unequal representation of female correspondents in positions of power within the media. The gravity of the situation is only compounded by the violent context in which they work, women's position in society, and the normalization of this violence in Mexico. In fact, violence and intimidation are highly effective in many areas of the globe, with local journalists often having no recourse. Like this national newspaper reporter from Africa. Her name and identifying features of her story have been removed for her safety.
There is censorship, from self-censorship to editorial censorship. And with newspapers, you find that the government actually holds back adverts if you publish anything against them. So it's not really very easy. You really come to a point where you feel like you're actually being put words into your mouth. So it's not really a very good situation to work in.
Have you yourself been censored, and on what sort of issues?
I have been censored. There's been a case in which one gentleman who served as a chief executive officer, this is a guy who was convicted of 11 charges of bribery and 2 of fraud. He was convicted. But just 3 months after his release, he's appointed chief technical advisor of a more august body to the one that he was convicted when he was working at. So issues like those, I was not supposed to have reported on that. I was actually intimidated. Immediately after something like 2 hours, I started getting threatening calls. We've just signed your death warrant. We're going to take you up on that and stuff like that. So really, there's a lot of censorship. Besides censorship, there is a lot of intimidation.
And do you feel safe working as a journalist there? You say you're dealing with death threats. How do you deal with that?
It's been a very rough patch in my life. And for some reason, I was even tempted to quit. Not just quit because I'm done with journalism, but like I wanted to hide for my life. And I fear for my family members, my husband and kids, because you never know who's behind this threat. Like, I tried reporting the whole matter to the police, and this is not the first time that I'm getting threats. But very unfortunately, nothing has been done. At a certain stage, I was sexually harassed in broad daylight by a member of parliament. And the person he was with was the prime minister's son. But you just won't believe me. To date, the matter has not been addressed. The investigating officer who took up on my case was transferred with immediate effect. And to date, I just have the number for the case, but nothing has happened. So I don't really feel safe.
This woman from Iran risked her life to get news of the events following the disputed presidential election in 2009 out to the world. She has chosen her own alias.
I would rather to be named as Sattar, the young blogger who has been killed in Iran prison.
What did the Iranian government do when people started coming out on the streets?
They were beaten, they were just arrested, they were killed.
You were one of a group of journalists that were trying to sneak information out of the country. How difficult was that?
If you publish it and they could see it in their networks, in the websites that you have published such a thing, they would come after you. If you send it through as information to other colleagues out, if they just track you because of they knew you, they knew what you're doing, so again, they came and arrested the people or threatened them. It happened even about the ordinary people, the one who hasn't been a journalist, but they just wrote about anything they saw in the street.
What happened to most journalists that were arrested? Did they simply serve jail time, or were they tortured?
Tortures hasn't been just physically. They have been mentally too. We have the white torture. It has happened to all of them. Some of them has been arrested and yet they are in the jail. some of them have been freed, but they are living under threats. They have been told, if you do anything, if you talk to anybody, if you continue your activities, again, you will be arrested.
We are learning more every day. Reporters Without Borders currently estimate that up to 13% of journalists killed are female. In 2013, INSEE, along with the International Women's Media Foundation, published the latest global research project investigating harassment and violence against female media workers. Of the 875 women journalists who responded, almost 65% said they had experienced intimidation, threats, or abuse, with 22% experiencing physical violence and 13% experiencing sexual violence. Almost half had experienced some form of sexual harassment. More research, though, is needed. If these statistics are to become action to better protect women who risk their lives for freedom of the press. Women like Juliana Sigrena, who in 2005, when making her first public appearance since her rescue from captivity went so horribly wrong, with American troops firing on her car, leaving her shot and her rescuer dying in her arms. She told a group of other women on the front line, "Someone told me I am not a smiling woman anymore, but I cannot feel free while others are being held captive. In terms of other women that have been kidnapped, they should not feel alone. During the month I was a prisoner, emotions were very high, and I was very confused. But some news came to me, and the thought that many were calling for my release helped. Solidarity helped. But journalists were also making me fearful. I felt the intrusion of our behavior, and after being set free, this has not changed. I wanted to go to Iraq and to report what was really going on, to speak to the people on the street. I understand why some colleagues choose to stay safely in the green zone, but I could not report that way, so I will not be going back. We must fight for truth as a democratic commitment and as journalists, and be aware that while journalists are under threat, the real victim of this war is truth." Juliana Sigrena. Portions of this program were first broadcast on Radio Netherlands Worldwide Vox Humana series in 2005. And are reused here with permission. This is Mindy Rann for the Women's International News Gathering Service.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. And please check our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughan, whose latest book is titled The Gift in the Heart of Language, The Maternal Source of Meaning. The Wing Sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.